offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Arvind. And we are here to continue with our satsang on the book, Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. It has been a wonderful journey to go through this book. Many, many topics are discussed, and that's one of the reasons why, though we've been doing it continuously for many weeks, unlike our other series where we used to do it in a fortnightly basis, we do find it that the themes are so different, that there's so much variety, there's so much we can discuss and learn about. As I was just telling one of the listeners this morning whom I happened to meet, we have definitely read this book when we were students. It was one of our popular books in the hostel when we were studying. But never did it really strike us that there is so much to learn from this book. Swami is covering so many important themes, not only spiritual, but so many practical things that Swami clears out. Some discussions that we're going to read through today, which are so important, which probably at the time when we read it, there was not much relevance to it. But today we find it so relevant. These messages which Swami is giving are eternal and are helpful for generations to come. They're so simple, and I think that's where the beauty of Swami's message always lies, in the simplicity and how direct the whole thing is. And in contrast with someone like Dr. Hislop, as we have said many times, his journey has been one of a quest which has involved a lot of places, a lot of techniques, a lot of gurus, a lot of masters. And it is very beautiful to see Swami explaining the whole spiritual concepts, the different questions that he asks, the answers that Swami gives, in contrast to all the learnings that he has gathered. And you can make out he's just as we are, he's thrilled to receive these messages from Swami. So before we begin this week's episode, let's invite Arvind to join all of us. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and Sairam to all our listeners. And it feels good to be back without a cold that was bothering me last week. Made me feel nasal and not so good about myself. But I would like to go back to last week, to the point with which we concluded the conversation, because it was so beautiful, it was so magnificent, and it fills us all with a lot of joy and thrill and, you know, gratitude. Because Swami said that the time we are all born now in the Kali Yuga, it is the best of times. In fact, Swami makes it aptly clear by saying it is even better than the times of Lord Krishna. So those who have got the opportunity to be born now as contemporaries with the Satya Sai avatar or with the awareness of the Satya Sai avatar are more blessed than even those who were contemporaries or those who had knowledge of the Krishna avatar. So that is really something we should keep reminding ourselves of, expressing our gratitude to Swami for this opportunity, and of course looking up to his teachings to see how we can make the best use of this opportunity. So on that note, let us continue with the conversations. At this point, Swami himself is initiating a discussion, very interestingly. So Swami begins by saying, cancer, it develops often as a small pustule. Then there is inflammation, some gas, and from this, cancer develops. And Hislop asks, Swami can cure even terminal cases of cancer? And Swami responds, oh yes, a certain person whom you know is a very good example of that. She was filled with cancer. The doctors gave up, removed the tubes, sewed up the incisions, and left her only a few days to live. Now she is strong and healthy and works all day. Now Hislop asks, Swami does that only when the karma is appropriate? If Swami is pleased with the person, he heals that person at once. Karma can have no effect on that, says Swami. And then Hislop says, this is extremely important information, because when people fail to get cured by Swami, they put it down to the fact that their karma is not ready. And Swami responds, if the person has a pure heart and is living Swami's teachings, Swami's grace is automatic. No karma can prevent that. A very, again, beautiful, interesting and uplifting piece of conversation, because it makes it amply clear that one need not feel burdened with one's destiny or karma, because there is a lot of hope and there is redemption if we can set right the present. Because effort lies in the realm of the present, and Swami says that if a person develops a pure heart and starts living Swami's teachings, it is not as if Swami decides to bless that person or anything like that. Swami says that it is just spontaneous. Swami's grace is automatic. So, I think we have knowledge here from Swami to show that there is no need to get despondent, demotivated or depressed, thinking that I'm suffering or I'm going through all this because of my past karma, which is untouchable. There's nothing I can do about it, because there is definitely a hope, there is a way out. I think that's why this conversation becomes very elevating.
Very true. As you said, the fact that Swami is giving us the option in the present, like Swami saying that if you can live Swami's life now, live a life which is filled with Swami's teachings and a pure heart. It's not about, you should have done good karma, and if you have that good karma, grace will come to you. Swami is talking about the present, and that is the most positive thing about what Swami is saying. But this whole, it's a very interesting thing, as you said, Swami starts off the conversation himself, or the topic himself, speaks about cancer, and I don't know how many medical professionals really know this fact about how cancer develops. I've not come across this anywhere. But it's a beautiful thing. Once a couple of maybe years back, I had a kind of an argument, you can say, with one of the peoples who belongs to, who's a disciple of another guru. And this person was talking about their idea of how a spiritual life has to be led. And for whatever reason, he decided to contrast it with what Swami says and what Swami does, from a very limited idea of what Swami is about and what Swami's teaching is about. So he was referring to how so many people are devoted to Swami purely because he is able to cure diseases and he is able to do all of these things. And one of the things he says in that discourse is, people believe that he is God just because he can cure cancer. Why, I know a doctor who can cure cancer. I know a doctor who has relieved patients from their diseases. So will you start worshipping all those people? But interestingly, if you look at it, it is not because Swami can cure cancer that we worship him. It is understood that certain things can be achieved by performing certain actions. But here is Swami who can negate that action and time and is able to produce the same result, which involves a certain set of actions. Right? A simple thing like a ring or a chain, Swami materializing. Why do we call it a miracle? Because producing a ring or chain is not very difficult. And if you have the gold, you put it through a process, you have a goldsmith who does it. But you don't worship the goldsmith, because mm-hmm. he has to invest time and he has to put his talent, he has to put in the knowledge that he has gathered and the resources to get that product. But here is Swami who is kind of able to negate all of that and produce the same result in a flash of a moment, or without requiring any of those other paraphernalia. And that is what makes him stand out. In fact, there are many, many devotees who are doctors who have become devotees looking at this, because they know the amount of energy and amount of effort that calls for to perform a surgery, to heal a patient. If Swami is able to do it in an interview room, over a dream, through the process of prayer, then you know that there is somebody who is able to do just what you are able to do, but in a completely different manner. In fact, once when we were talking to one of the teachers, he was saying that he was speaking to Colonel Jogarao. Colonel Jogarao, one of Swami's devotees, who by profession, I think, is a civil engineer. And he was very close to Swami. He has seen a lot of miracles. You know, he's been part of so many trips to Kodaikanal, and he's been in so many interviews. But for him, the most beautiful miracle that he had, and which really made him feel that there's something special about Swami, is, which probably you and me might not look at as a standout miracle, when Swami materialized the Hanuman statue, as the design for the Hanuman statue on the hill, on the Hillview Stadium top.
That little golden idol.
Right. They were not able to get the right design, because any structure built so high will have resistance from the wind movement and everything. And Swami materialized the small statue of Hanuman, where, you know, the Angavastram of Hanuman was falling over his shoulders and onto his
thigh.
And that becomes the support for the whole structure. Mm. And from his engineering background, that was a brilliant solution to this problem that they're having. And Swami did it so instantly. You know, they were putting all kinds of designs into the computer and trying to, with all their measurements, come up with the design. And Swami just waves his hand, materializes that model, and he says, this is the best design. And it turned out to be that was the best design. So for a civil engineer, from all his knowledge, for him, that was a miracle which made him, you know, look at Swami completely differently. So in that sense, whatever all of these things which Swami says, cancer can be cured, or any kind of ailment can be cured, any kind of, all the kind of miracles that we have seen and that we speak of, they all can be done. For Swami, it is so simple and so natural for Swami, and that is what makes Swami stand out.
I think actually, it is ignorance that makes people get these kind of doubts. Because as you said, for a civil engineer, that seemed like a marvelous thing. And when Swami materialized that small golden idol of Hanuman carrying the hill in his right hand with the mace in his left hand, with the mace in the right hand and the hill in the left hand, all of us would look at it as a miracle, because Swami manifested a 12-inch or 10-inch idol of gold from nowhere.
Right.
At the same time, it was a miracle for Jogarao because of the way the idol was constructed, because it looked like a perfection in engineering. So I feel whatever field we are good at, we are able to observe and notice and see that something phenomenal has happened in that. If we are not, we don't even register it. Till Colonel Jogarao revealed it, possibly we would never have registered that as, oh wow, that's a fantastic thing. For us, it's only that out of nowhere a piece of gold came. That is a miracle. Possibly because we are at that level, we are not engineering people. So anywhere, if we have to understand the magic, understand the miracle that's happening, we need to have some amount of knowledge. Some amount of knowledge to appreciate that, wow, this is phenomenal. Otherwise, we just miss it. If at all, if we think there is nothing big in, you know, curing cancer or curing any disease, how is it that so many doctors of such great repute and such great achievement have come and surrendered, you know, at Swami's lotus feet physically? Whether, I forget his name, the foremost cardiologist from India who has won worldwide renown.
Dr. Venugopal.
Yes, Dr. Venugopal. Whether it's Dr. Venugopal or whether it's the father of urology in India, Dr. Bhatt. These are not any doctor or just good doctors. These are doctors who have won acclaim and recognition from the world as being the best in their field. And when we would see, I have not seen much of Dr. Venugopal, but I've had the privilege of seeing the interaction between Dr. Bhatt and Swami. My God, Dr. Bhatt would be, even physically, I think in age, bodily age, he was elder to Bhagwan. And yet, the way with reverence, with humility, he would bow down. Definitely, as a doctor, he has seen something which possibly I won't appreciate because I don't even have the ABC of knowledge in urology. And he has narrated. We have interviews on Radio Sai with some of his experiences with Bhagwan. So I feel we need at least some basic knowledge to even be able to acknowledge that a miracle has happened. Otherwise, it will be like dogs barking at an elephant. So coming back to what Swami says that even the terminal cases of cancer, he can cure. And I think we have heard so many instances of that. The famous popular catchphrase being, cancer is cancelled. The one closest to our heart, to my heart, is that of the father of Dr. T. Ravi Kumar, who is currently warden of Brindavan campus. How Swami, just through a single utterance, cancelled the cancer. And for decades after that, he lived on. In fact, he lived on longer than the doctor who had predicted that he would be gone in a few weeks or a couple of months' time. So, none of this is beyond Swami. Everything is absolutely possible. And Swami says, in return, you need only to have a pure heart and make God happy. Because Swami says, if Swami is pleased with a person, he heals the person at once. Now, I feel this is a kind of an interesting situation, because Swami has clearly said that devotion, bhakti, makes him very happy. And Swami has defined what is meant by true devotion. true devotion is defined as equanimity. So if you want healing, you need to develop equanimity, which makes Swami happy, which pleases Swami. But if we are truly equanimous, it will actually not matter whether he heals us or not. So it's like a, you know, it's a paradoxical situation. In order to win that instantaneous grace from Swami or spontaneous blessing from Swami, we have to be in a state where it doesn't matter whether that healing happens or not. So that is the interesting, if I can say, paradox here. But Swami says, if Swami is pleased, nothing will block his grace. It is not even that he wills to give the grace, because it's just a spontaneous outflow.
And that positiveness, I think, is what Swami is, what comes out in this conversation at least. What this reminds me is of, there's one Dr. Vishal Rao, I think, one of the surgeons who is a visiting doctor in our hospital. I was listening to a talk that he had given, I think, in the Whitefield Super Speciality Hospital once. Apparently, he was visiting Germany and he was hosted by one of the doctors who was a very senior oncologist in Germany. And I mean, he actually, I think, wanted to just meet that person, and that person offered to host him when he was in Germany or something like that. And he went to his house, which was something like a mini castle itself. And he was narrating how, you know, he was in complete awe of this person, who later he figured out is also a devotee of Swami. So he said, I want to show you the reports of, my own case. Would you care to take a look? And so he brought all of his files and showed it to him. And he looked at everything and he said, so tell me, doctor, what is your prognosis? What do you say? So he said, it's terminal case of cancer. Your doctors, whoever treating you, must have told you that it's about, you'll have about 2 or 3 months to live. That's what your reports say. And this senior doctor looks at this Indian doctor and says that, I'm pretty disappointed with the way you're reading the report. He said, and he was a little offended. He said, no, I'm pretty well qualified to read this report, and this one I can make out. He said, yes, all that is fine. You know, whatever you said about the report is fine, but you did not read the date of the report. And when he read the date, it was 10 years ago. So he said, it's impossible that you're alive today. What did you do? You know, how did you get out of this whole thing? And then he goes on to say how Swami cured him, and he's completely out of the thing. And he's, you know, just like in Dr. Roy Kumar's father's case, he says, I'm fitter than all the doctors who, you know, told me that I will not live past 3 months. And he's completely healthy. And in fact, you know, being a doctor and being a person of a very analytical mind, he goes back into how doctors look at patients and how they treat patients, how they break a news such as, you know, what a cancer can do to them or what an ailment can do to them. So he says, see, any case always has a certain percentage of recovering from that particular problem. He said, when you talk about cancer or any terminal illness like that, he says probably there's 4 or 5 or 10% chance of that person coming over it. He says, if you actually look at it, 10% is a lot of chance. But we all harp on that 90% chances of that person dying. And we kind of put that into the patient's head, the doctor's head. And he said, in Swami's approach, the difference is, he looks at that 5% and he wants you to look at that 5%. As you said, it is not that, you know, betting against that 5%, oh God, Swami, I should get over this, I don't want this cancer. But just that, for Swami, it is possible. You know, for you and me, it's 90% and 10% or 99% and 1%. For Swami, it doesn't matter. You know, it's even that 1% is as good as 100% for Swami. So that approach, you were saying that is lacking in the medical profession. And he says that, you know, from this cure that Swami gave him, he gave a completely different way to approach a patient's problem when you're, you know, reporting it to the patient or to that family. And once again, as you were saying, when you have a knowledge and when you look at a miracle, the kind of messages that you take from it is completely different than a person who probably looks at it as a miracle and says, okay, somebody's cancer was cancelled or somebody was saved. So in that sense, the way Swami is saying it, he said, what do you mean by terminal cancer? Nothing is beyond Swami. And that is the positiveness, I think, which as devotees, all of us should always carry in our minds.
And this is an advice that Swami would give doctors as well. I remember reading it in a discourse, though I do not recollect exactly which discourse it is, where Swami says that it is not right that a doctor checks the pulse of a patient and makes a face of alarm like, oh my God, your BP is so... No, Swami says, be calm, tell it very calmly, because that makes a lot of difference. In fact, when the hospitals have been designed, Swami has pulled in architects and Swami has guided them in a manner to design it not as a hospital but as a temple. Because Swami said that when a person enters this place, the feelings that envelop the person should be the same kind of feeling that envelop a person when he or she enters a temple. And that's how the environment is. There are bhajans going on. There is a kind of sanctity and devotional vibrations all around. Swami says with that most of the healing will happen. Because, you know, whether we accept it or not, the ultimate truth is that we are all temples of God. The body is a temple of God, which means there is divinity within. If only we focus on that, I think healing or any other thing happens automatically. We can, I think, extend this even beyond physical healing to even mental cancers. You know, worry. Worry, for example, is like a cancer. Swami would say worry is just mentally created. It's nothing. It has no shape. What is the shape of worry? What is the form of worry? Swami would ask this in discourses, you know, varying between worry and fear. Swami would say, what is the shape of fear? What is the So both this worry and fear, they are like cancer. You know, just like a cancer begins with one cell and then it just propagates and becomes so big that it can cause death. In the same way, worry is nothing but a cancerous thought. Fear is nothing but a cancerous thought. If we focus on that cancer, on that thought, on that worry, it just grows out of proportions and suddenly becomes big enough to cause pain and strangle us at a mental level. I think we can even take that message home that everything, you know, not just the physical cancer that develops from a small pustule, like that only our worry and fear develops from a small thought. At that level itself, with God's grace, we can finish it off. But even if we have been unsuccessful and it has grown into gargantuan proportions and we feel we are unable to deal with it, even at that time it's not too late. If we are able to focus on Swami, Swami's love and purity of the heart, in an instant, instantaneously and spontaneously, it can be cured.
The problem is none of us want that simplistic approach to healing. As we can see in the rest of the conversation which goes on here, a very interesting exchange again, where Hislop goes on to ask, there is a situation in California where a healer wishes to join a Sri Satya Sai center and use his healing powers for the benefit of Baba's devotees. The leader of that particular center has had relief from illness by means of the power flowing from the hands of this healer, and has had the idea that the healer has been sent by Baba and that Baba is doing the healing through the person of the healer. I was requested to ask Swami for Swami's viewpoint. And Swami replies to that saying, the power flowing from the healer is not Swami's power. It is evil power. The healer is himself in need of healing. Divine power is in every place. It arises from within. Both these bodies, pointing to Hislop and the driver of the car, are strong and healthy, implying that the health was due to divine power without the agency of an outside healer.
So, one thing that becomes very clear is this is a conversation happening in a car.
Right.
So, they're driving and Hislop is possibly seated beside Swami in the back seat and there's a driver and possibly someone else in the front seat or nobody there. But that aside, Swami's focus, if we see, for any problem, has always been to go inside, go within. Whether it is making an individual independent in a physical sense, mental sense or a spiritual sense, Swami says independence is independence. That's why, you know, when it comes to the point of gurus, Swami would say that in Kali Yuga, I think we discussed this in the conversation itself, Swami says in this Yuga, the best guru is God. Who is the resident of your heart? Don't turn to any other external gurus because most of them are out there to take you for a ride. Swami doesn't negate the existence of other gurus, but he says that most of them are there for commercial and materialistic purposes. And I think Swami gives the analogy of a person stuck in quicksand. And Swami says, if a person himself is stuck in quicksand, how will he help to pull out another person who is in quicksand? So also when it comes to healing, Swami is focusing on what is within, internal. It's almost like anything that we seek externally from outside, that in itself is like an infection or affliction. Healing a lot of healing happens from within, and Swami is trying to focus onto that. Because there is a kind of, not there is a kind of, there is healing force that is within, which is God. We have to find ways to activate that. And I was just thinking the other day, when I took my little baby for, this is a couple of years back, to the doctor for, because she was suffering from fever. The doctor saw, diagnosed, gave some things and all that, and that is when it suddenly struck me that when you and me get fever, cough or cold, and when we go and meet the doctor, just meeting the doctor itself, have you noticed, starts making you feel a little better. Many times it happens that I've gone to the doctor and the fever is reduced, and I tell the doctor that, you know, I swear that today morning it was 101, 102, I don't know what happened now. There's a kind of effect where you meet the doctor and it you start feeling better. It just struck me that maybe this is an indication of the power that is inherent within. Somehow meeting the doctor activates that power within. You just feel that, now I'm going to get all right, now that I'm with the doctor. And that is why just that awareness, now I'm going to meet the doctor, this is going to happen, it already starts making you feel better. But that is not observed in babies and children. Possibly till they reach an age where they're also able to associate doctor with health and such things, it doesn't happen to them. Because when they're infants, what fever they have at home, the same fever they exhibit there. I have seen this observation, and I'm sure many also would have made this observation. And for me, it is an indicator of the healing power that is inherent within. It's just about we finding ways to activate it. Unfortunately or fortunately, one of the ways we activate it is by actually meeting a doctor. If we are able to activate it in other ways, I think healing can happen from within, and that is what Swami is trying to focus on.
And Swami is drawing out the fact that the very truth that we are all healthy itself is a sign of that divine power within. As Swami is pointing out to his Hislop and the driver and saying that you are healthy and you don't realize that that's because of the divine power which is there within. That you're talking about healing being an indication of divine power flowing from outside. I mean, if you look at any kind of healing or any kind of medication for that matter, you know, one of the things which happens is, you know, when you're, say, some organ starts failing, like the liver or something like that, and a medication is given from outside, the degenerate part of the liver starts functioning after some time. But the very fact that it was functioning all this while does not remind you that it was a divine power which is activating from within. And, you know, when you say about regeneration of the liver, probably some new cells are formed, or, you know, some cells which were dying are getting regenerated. The very fact that when you look at it, you know, from a single-celled fertilized egg, you've had all of these organs produced out of that single cell, right from the bone, which is hard, to the tissue, which is the softest. You know, the lens in your eyes has come from the same cell. Your hair has come from the same cell. Which means, imagine the amount of automation which was put into that one single cell, which is so tiny, right? And we do not ever attribute, or we always forget to attribute, as much of that divine power which is there in that, as we have quoted many times, to be normal is a miracle. We forget that all the time. And Swami is saying that, you know, you have in your body that ability, you know, you've grown from that single cell to a individual which is 80 kgs heavy and which is 5 or 6 feet tall. That itself is a miracle. And as you always point out, we always tend to forget slow miracles or overlook slow miracles. We are always fascinated by miracles which happen, you know, in a conceivable frame of time, instantly in front of our eyes. But this is a miracle which is happening, and because it's so common, we, you know, it doesn't interest us as much as a healing process from somebody else outside would.
And I also think it is because when we see something in contrast, we are able to appreciate it. For instance, one of my favorite examples is if there's an earthquake which flattens all houses and only one wall of your house falls, the other three walls are standing. You express so much of gratitude, you're thrilled at the miracle that, you know, the three walls of the house are still there. It's so fantastic, it's so phenomenal. You're appreciating it so much. But on any other day when there's no earthquake, all the four walls with the roof, it's all standing, it's firm. We never stop by to appreciate the grandeur of the house. See, for instance, today as we began the satsang itself, I was so thrilled and I said it feels awesome to be able to speak. Why? Because I suffered a cold, because I had that flu, and now I'm feeling thrilled. There are 360 days in the year when the voice is like this, and rarely do we pause and ponder at the wonder that is keeping us like this. I'm able to appreciate some pills and medicines, which brings me back to that state after 5 days of suffering. But I'm not appreciating that force and power that is inherent within, that is keeping me fit for 360 days. So I think it's more about us becoming more and more aware of this happening. That's why Swami would always say it's not just ordinary awareness, it's constant integrated awareness. Then we will not have to lose anything in order to learn its value. Otherwise, I feel destiny itself will fashion losses in our life so that we learn to appreciate things that we have.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is such a practical thing that Swami is saying, that, you know, this is a recognition of a divine power, not from a miraculous event. Just the previous paragraph, we spoke about terminal cancer, which the doctors have given up Swami curing, and that is a sign of divinity. Here, Swami is asking us to recognize the sign of divinity in normalcy. It's a contrast to what Swami said then. And it is as important as that. Just like how Swami allows himself to be known through a miracle. Once you know Swami through a miracle, I think you have to recognize him in these miracles which happen constantly every day of our life. And that's for a good reason. You know, as this conversation itself progresses, just to refresh, it is about a healer who wants to practice his healing in a Sai center. So this is one thing, is from the individual level of understanding of the divine power within, but also an organizational message which Swami is giving here. There is a healer who wants to practice his healing in a Sai center, claiming that it is Swami's energy. And Swami is making it very clear that it is not his power, it is an evil power. Because Swami doesn't define what it is, so we'll probably be not touching upon that. But at least Swami is saying that the claims that an individual from outside needs to be an agent of Swami's divine power to benefit another person, I think Swami is completely rubbishing that idea here.
In fact, he goes on. If we see the conversation ahead, Hislop now says, very interesting this is. Hislop says, Swami, the healer also has a question. He asks if what he is doing is all right. So Swami says that the center or the patient don't need the service of the healer. But now the healer is asking, okay, they don't need, but can I continue to do? And Swami says, no, it is not all right. It is not divine power flowing through the person of the healer. And then Hislop says, how then should one be healed? Swami says, by ordinary medical means and by prayer. Hislop continues, but Swami, there are thousands of cases around the world of sick people being healed by healers. What about them? And Swami says, any benefit is only a temporary feeling of relief and is not real. If a healing occurs, it is because the person has had a feeling or thought of God. Hislop then says, then power from God does not flow into a person? And Swami says, where is God? He is within you. From within he heals. It is not pictured here. I'm just thinking Swami is like now pulling out his hair and telling, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Power of God, it need not flow into you from outside. It is flowing from within you. And Swami makes it clear that, because this is absolutely a question that arises in all our minds, that there are so many of these so-called healers, whether they use energies, auras or different thing. And there are people who claim that they have had success there. Swami is saying that all that is not real, it's only temporary. But if at all a healing has happened, it is because the person who has had the healing has had a feeling or thought of God. Which means, it's almost like that healing process or the procedure, whatever is done, is a placebo. Means, whether it was done or not, this person would have got healed because he's in touch with God. The other person would not have got healed because it's not in touch with God. So Swami is saying that, It may appear as if that there are healers who are healing, but it is because the person has got in touch with God. And if that happens, the healer is not needed. And if that is not happening, then also the healer is not needed. Basically, the healer is not needed because the healing happens from within.
Just going through this conversation, reminded of what our Professor Bhagya used to say. And we've discussed about his famous interview where Swami shouts at him when he says that he wants to resign and go away. And Swami tells him that, you know, I'm giving you this opportunity to serve these students and serve the people around you, and I will ensure you that you get what you need. If you don't do that, and then Swami says, I think 70,000 years or whatever is the metric that Swami uses. But the thing is, after that, he says that when Swami tells it so firmly, the idea is so clear. So I think that's when he goes and asks Swami, that Swami, I know I have a little bit of knowledge of homeopathy. Can I use that to, you know, help students? And Swami says, yes, definitely do that. You know, whatever you know and whatever can be of benefit to others, you use it. If you really look at it, you know, it is, you know, from that conversation which he had in the interview room about his spiritual progress, and Swami telling him that I'm giving you the opportunity to progress spiritually by the situation I put you in as a teacher, as a person of, you know, having the ability to guide so many young people. Swami is telling him that, see, that is the best thing for you. It is for your own spiritual progress. And even this opportunity to go into the hostel, and we all know, even when we were students, used to come to the dispensary and dispense homeopathy medicines. So Swami gave him the opportunity for his own spiritual growth. And we all know that the little bit of interaction that we would have with Bhagya sir would be so refreshing for us, because this conviction in Swami and faith in Swami would be so infectious. It would rub off us. So the way Swami is saying it here, it is like the healing, you don't need an external agency for any kind of healing. But it might be good for your own spiritual progress. You know, just like how any number of doctors who are working in our Swami's hospital, clearly they're not needed from what Swami is saying here. But it is part of their spiritual progress by which, you know, they are able to offer that service as an offering to Swami and as an instrument of Swami. At the same time, even the patients who are benefiting, in fact, you know, when you're talking about the architecture of the hospital and how it was built to appear like a temple, I was once talking to the PR in the super specialty hospital here, Brother Harsha. He was saying that any number of patients he has met who has told him about the miraculous feeling they felt sitting in the dome over there. And the dome in the super specialty hospital, for our listeners who might not know, the decor of that space was completely done by Swami. And Swami used to be, quote unquote, very possessive about that space. You couldn't do anything, you couldn't change anything in that place. For some reason, Swami, not for some reason, for a very specific reason, Swami had kept that place completely, you know, in a way that he wanted it to be. And patients and doctors and visitors, so many people, he has said that they've stood under that dome, under that chandelier, and they felt something different. The patients, caretakers and families, in that sense, you know, Swami has only set up a situation where the people who are health givers and people who receive that service, both of them have an opportunity to literally have a brush or tryst with divinity for their own spiritual progress. So in that sense, Swami, whatever you do, it's got nothing to do with the spiritual power coming from outside or divine power coming from outside which you need. I think Swami is categorically making that clear in this conversation and in many, many other exchanges before this, in this book also.
Just to continue along what you said, when Swami is speaking about healer, I think, you know, it is not against the physical dispensing of medicines. For example, you go to an engineer, he fits a nut, he fits nuts, bolts, he knows how to fix it, make a structure stand. In a similar manner, a doctor could be considered as an engineer for the human body. So, giving out, materials which will help in that material, that is what is possibly dispensing of medicines or dispensing, you know, in whatever, whether it's Ayurveda or homeopathy or Unani or allopathy, which is the most used, whatever you do, that's fine, because Swami himself is saying the best way is go by ordinary medical means and prayer. I think here when the reference is being made to a healer, I don't think it should be taken in a generic term to mean any doctor. I think there are those healers who say that they are channeling the power of God and bring about healing. You don't need to take any medicine because the power of God will cure you. You don't need to, or, you know, I'm getting energies from the universe and channeling that energy into you. I think it is with reference to such kind of healing, because Swami is saying that, yes, it is divinity that heals, and the medicines and all are excuse, you can take that. But then, to get that divine energy, to get that divinity or the grace of God, you don't need somebody who has to channel it into you. I think here Swami is disparaging the use of these channels and mediums. more than anything else. Swami is not negating the existence of divine power or divine energies. Swami is not negating the use of medicines and therapies in medical field. Swami is saying, yes, keep them together, don't mix them up. Take medicines that the material world dispenses and depend on the Lord in your heart. Don't try to get the Lord from the physical world through channels, mediums or so-called healers.
Absolutely. And the very idea is, you know, it's again, healing is also something which Swami is not completely negating, as you said. But what would happen and what has happened many times in the past is, you know, when you come to a Sai center, you already have a gathering of people who believe in something which is supernatural.
Hmm.
And it's very easy because Swami's devotees have seen the supernatural. Swami's devotees have had experiences of something which is beyond what the reasoning mind can understand. You already have an audience which is ready to receive something when you say that, oh, this is divine power, or this is the power of the universe, this is cosmic healing and all of that. And Swami is saying that the Sai Center is not a place meant for people to come and use it for such purpose. And when you say that, you know, when you're sitting in front of Swami's altar, and when you say he is the Supreme Lord, you're saying that here is the source of all the power. And that's why so clearly Swami says, take medicine and pray. What more do you want? If you want the reasoning mind to be satisfied, there is medicines, as you rightly said, scientifically acclaimed and scientifically proven medicines. You take that if that's what your mind calls for. For everything else, you can pray directly to me. For any other form of healing or any other form of energy to come and cure you, you can directly pray to me. Why do you need any other person to turn to channelize that energy to you?
Absolutely. In fact, I remember my aunt, she suddenly discovered sometime in 2004 or 5 when she came to Bangalore that both her kidneys had completely failed.
Mm-hmm.
And she had gotten yellow and she was very sickly, high fever. So the doctor said that, you know, it is very, very difficult, especially in India, to find an appropriate kidney donor and do a kidney transplant and ensure that it's a success, or else it is weekly, twice or thrice you have to undergo this dialysis. And at that time when we checked up, what we got to know is that such dialysis, if you continuously keep doing, possibly because she was also beyond her 60s, so about 5-6 years, that's what medically even the doctor gave. So when I got an opportunity, I told this to Swami. Swami just took about a handful of vibhuti packets, maybe about 14 or 15 of them, gave them to me and said, give this to her. I said, Swami, that's enough then? So no need of anything else? Swami said, no. Whatever the doctor is telling, do, but tell her to keep taking this vibhuti. So, you know, I must say that till the end of her life, she kept taking that vibhuti. She kept undergoing dialysis. Just that instead of the 5-6 years which medically said would be possible, she lived for about 12 to 13 years after that. You know, just a couple of years back, she passed away. And I feel that is definitely a miracle. You know, medically, the experts have said that on dialysis alone, because, you know, it gets very sore. Thrice a week in the same spot, you are poking into the body to, you know, cleanse the blood through an external machine. So the body will not be able to take, they said, maximum 5-6 years. But she lived for 12 years after that. So it was literally a case of this. You pray and do. I mean, it is, you don't need a healer to do that. That divinity is there within you. And when you, I think Swami's vibhuti reinforced that sense of positivity with that it happened. So I think it's so, so clear for us what to do when we suffer. And once again, I think we should extend this even to all other ailments, not just physical ailments, whether it's mental, psychological ailment. It's about doing what has to be done from the effort side and praying. Praying, it's such a very, very important aspect of healing. And that should never, ever be separated from medical science or treatment or anything, because that is what I think, apart from bringing about healing, it is prayer that also ensures a good quality of life even while you are undergoing treatment or therapy or suffering from whatever the ailment is.
And as many times Swami himself would say, the ailment itself might be only an excuse for you to turn to God. right? And in that sense also, as putting everything together, when Swami speaks about equanimity and equanimity leading to grace and grace healing and everything together, it is all nothing but an excuse for you to turn to God. So in that sense, and Swami would often say that, you know, whatever you do towards the body, when you're physically taking care of the needs of the body or treatment which is required, that also becomes like the karma that you're supposed to perform for the body. You know, Swami would say that this is a temple of healing, and just like how you take care of it till the, you know, the given period of time, whatever medication that you're taking to keep the body healthy also becomes like a duty that you perform towards the body. You can do it in as detached a manner as everything else you can do. So in that sense, so I think this is a very important portion where Swami says, especially I'm sure there might be a lot of issues in Sai centers where some of these practices are there. Debates happen very often. I think this is a portion which is very clear where Swami says, you don't need any more healing other than Swami himself. And that Swami is not even in a Sai center. Swami is within. And the Sai center or any of Swami's organizations is only a process by which you turn to that Swami within. And anything like this of an external person trying to heal you only becomes a distraction to turning within, and you're again going to another person. So in that sense, Swami is very clear about that. So dear listeners, we'll take a short break. Don't go away. The conversation continues based on whatever has been said so far, and something more is going to be added. So after this short break of the song, we'll come back again.
Yeah. उतारेंगे हर घर की आंगन में जन्नत उतारेंगे जिसके दिल में नफरत हो मोहब्बत से भर देंगे अंधेरे मिटा कर रोशनी भर देंगे वो साई तुझ में समा है ये
Welcome back, dear listeners. Speaking of healers and healing and medicine, the discussion continues when a visitor now asks Swami. So he asks, Baba, since time is simply your will and has no reality outside of that, duration of time is also your will, why not shorten time a bit? People have so much suffering. Why do they have to suffer for so long a time? So he's telling Swami, since you have control on time, why don't you just fast forward time? And, you know, it's like slow the time when you're having good things and fun and speed up the time when you're facing miserable things. You know, interestingly, before I go to Swami's answer, it just reminds me what Einstein had said. He said, I'll explain to you relativity of time. It depends on whether you're sitting on a stove or sitting beside a pretty woman whom you want to talk to. That's how Albert Einstein had said. In one case, 1 second feels like a minute or an hour. In the other case, minutes fly by like seconds. So, he's like, I mean, the visitor's question is like directly opposite of what is the general observation. The general observation is when you're suffering, time seems to be going very slow. And when you're having a good time, time seems to be flying. That's why you have an interview with Swami, you sit in the interview room and you feel, oh my God, 40 minutes are over. At the same time, when Swami is ignoring you, 10 days he ignores you, you feel like he has ignored me for months or years. So here he's saying, Swami, why don't you reduce the suffering period to very short? Because anyway, you're the master of time. He is not saying that you elongate the pleasurable time, but possibly that would have been the request had Swami responded favorably. Swami says, they are being tested, but it should not be called so. It is grace. Those who suffer have my grace. Only through suffering will they be persuaded to turn inward and make the inquiry. Without turning inward and making inquiry, they can never escape misery. So Swami is answering and saying, that is a test, but they should not consider it like a test. Because in reality, they are being given the ultimate solution out of all suffering, which is discovery of their true self, which will happen only if they turn inward. And they turn inward only in times of crisis, only in times of difficulties. They turn to God or turn inward only when there is something difficult or something suffering, something that makes you suffer, which happens. Otherwise, nobody turns. And Swami says, that is why that comes. And it lasts long enough so that you discover that true source of joy, after which you will never have misery again. If temporarily that suffering is stopped, your relief is also only temporary because soon it will come back again. So actually this is great kindness from the Lord, great compassion of the Lord that He is using a phase or a stage when we are suffering. He's using it in such a manner so that we, out of that situation, develop that inward connect, develop that inquiry, which will lead us to a stage where we will never ever suffer again in our life.
When you look at this answer that Swami is giving, it clearly makes out, it clearly speaks of the difference in approach that we have. You know, when the visitor says, why can't you make time fly when you're suffering? You're looking at suffering as something unwanted. But here Swami is saying, it's not suffering, it's grace. And how can you ask me to not give grace, which is the way Swami looks at it is completely different from what the visitor is saying here, or for that matter, what all of us look at. And it's a very a tricky thing, you know, if you look at it, even in the previous answer that Swami gave. Swami said, take medicines and you pray, you know, if you have a problem, which means Swami is saying that it is not wrong to seek relief when you're in pain. Right? That's why Swami is saying that you can go to a doctor, you can take medicine, and that's why Swami has built a hospital. But at the same time, Swami is also saying that it is meant to turn you within, which means don't seek relief all the time. Some pain is meant to, you know, at least sometimes you will turn within when in that pain or when in that suffering. Now the problem comes, which pain is meant to be endured and which pain is supposed to be cured and relief sought for which kind of a pain. And that is why I think prayer comes into that picture. The moment you say that, yeah, I need relief, but I'll leave that choice of whether I get this relief or not to Swami. And I think that is the best middle path which is available. And this we will miss out the moment you start, you know, trying every option around. Swami would say that, you know, try as much as you can. And if you have a problem, you go to a doctor, you take a medicine, you undergo treatment. But don't get so desperate that you will do anything and you will, you know, go, I mean, as Swami would say, that you're ready to resort to adharmic ways to relieve yourself of that pain. You know, in this case, we're talking about physical pain and physical ailment. But that's what happens when you talk about a situation where you're stricken by poverty, for example. It's nothing wrong to work hard and try to get rid of that poverty. But don't be so obsessed with that poverty, getting rid of that poverty, that you're ready to do things which are immoral that will help you get out of it. So that balance is what will make you turn within, as Swami is saying here.
Even when you speak of physical pain, we have people turning to addictive substances,
right,
abusive substances, so that they get temporary relief. Or in worst case scenarios, people resorting to suicides,
right,
you know, taking their own life. So all that, I think the best way would be, as you said, we cannot make out which is the pain we are supposed to endure, which is the pain that we are supposed to cure. It would be best to view any suffering that comes as something that is prodding us to turn within. With any suffering, without thinking whether this is something that will be cured or whether I'll be enduring it, let me use it as an opportunity to turn inward. Because Swami says that the ultimate solution to all pain and suffering is to turn inward. Once you have truly turned inward and you are established in it, then no pain and suffering will ever touch you. And for that we have examples, glorious examples, like whether it's Mirabai or Prahallada, so many people where things that we think as very painful from a worldly sense didn't even cause a scratch on their body. So that is what we have to endeavor to reach. Speaking of, you know, speeding up all the suffering times and slowing down the pleasurable times, exactly on this theme, Hollywood has made a movie where a person gets a remote where he can choose to slow down whatever parts of life he wants and speed up whatever parts of life. And the conclusion of the movie is very interesting, because it concludes with this man finding, searching desperately for a way to destroy and throw away this remote. Because what he realizes is, though he has fast-forwarded all the so-called painful life moments in his life, what he thought will be painful, he realized that at the end of his life, he has had no learning at all. The most wonderful or important learnings of life all happen in moments of suffering. And this is a truth. I think if we look at our own life, we realize that things we thought are the toughest situations in our life have actually made us what we are today. That's why Swami would in his discourses say, na sukhat labhyate sukham. Meaning, it is not from pleasure that you get pleasure. It's very, very paradoxical, but the truth that it's only difficult situations that actually give you pleasure. And going back to the movie, the conclusion of the movie is also that only. That every when you have fast-forwarded all the painful and sorrowful situations in your life, you end up at the end of life without any learning in life. I think that is another kind of perspective we can have, to look at every suffering and every painful situation as a learning experience. Because when we go to school and when we learn, I'm sure we have plucked out our hairs when we try to learn the alphabet or numbers. But today we are so grateful for it. We use alphabets and numbers in day-to-day life. Any learning is like that, whether it's learning to ride the bicycle, whether learning to run swimming or education. When we are learning, it's very painful, very frustrating, very irritating. But once we come out of it, once it's over, we are very grateful for what we went through. I think to look at pain and suffering also from this perspective, that this is not a painful situation, but this is something that I'm learning, would be very, very helpful and help us progress rather than go down.
Right. And what Swami is saying here, he's saying that, you know, only through suffering will they be persuaded to turn inward. And many times when we have spoken about pain and suffering, we've made this very clear that pain is different from suffering. Pain is something that you experience in a bodily level, but suffering is always a choice. That you could choose to suffer it more than it is necessarily meant to be done. But if you really look at pain, you know, what is pain meant to do to your body? In fact, one of the most common kind of pains which we have, which we were struggling with last year, is some kind of a throat infection. And they would often tell us this, the tonsils, inflammation of the tonsils is one of the ways by which your body is sending you a message that, you know, you've probably eaten too many cold things or too many things which tend to cause this particular situation. You have to eat more spicy things or drink more hot things. It's a means by which the body is giving you a message that there's been an imbalance. So in a way, you have not given enough attention to the body, and pain is a means by which your attention is brought to that particular organ which is failing or which is undergoing a problem so that it can be sorted out. In the same manner, if you look at suffering, in fact, I think much of the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells this to Arjuna, that the very fact that you're suffering, you're pained, you're worried about something, you're fearing something, is a sign that there is so much more growth left in your spiritual understanding. So in that sense, when Swami says suffering is a means by which you turn inward, every time you're stricken by fear, every time you're, you know, you're worried about something, you are suffering because someone has been unfair to you, it's a sign that there is space for growth for you. Mm. So Swami says, and if you're always trying to run away from that suffering to find some kind of an external means by putting away that suffering, Swami says you miss this opportunity to recognize that there's something wrong within you. And that's why suffering is always a choice, whether you go outward looking for relief, or even as you go outward looking for relief, also go within and see that, you know, what is wrong within me that I'm getting so disturbed and I'm getting so worried about.
You know, it's very interesting when you said that, because that was my personal experience too. You know, when you get a severe cold and infection, on one hand you're given antibiotics, and on the other hand, to control your flowing nose, you're given some cetirizine and other such antihistamines. What I noticed is, while one is going and battling the cause of the problem, the other one is kind of symptomatic relief. And I noticed that as long as I take symptomatic relief, it gives relief only temporarily, only to ensure that the cold comes back with greater fury the next day. Forget the antibiotics. When I'm just taking that cetirizine, I noticed that my cold, which would have otherwise lasted 4 to 5 days, lasts even up to 2-3 weeks. It's because it's stopping the flow from coming out. And as long as the medicine is working, it stops. Again it starts. Again I take, it's stopping. Instead of that, I just allow it to flow out. It's over in 5 days. So, like you said, most of the time in life, for all life's problems also, we are just looking at only symptomatic relief. And as long as we are looking at symptomatic relief, we will never actually find relief. However painful it is, we should go to the root of the problem and sort it out. That will be truly relief. And that is what I think Swami also is encouraging us to do, because any other kind of worldly relief that you find for your pains is only symptomatic relief. It's only turning inward that gives you actual true relief.
You're talking about your throat problem. A couple of weeks back when I had a sprain in my leg, what the doctor said was again very interesting. He said, you know, you will have pain because you have kind of inflammation of the soft tissue or whatever it is, but don't take any painkillers. Mm-hmm. Because as long as there is pain in the feet, you'll know that there's something wrong and you'll take care of it. Uh-huh. You know, you'll walk carefully. And it was so true. Because once you take painkillers, you don't have that indication that there's something wrong there. And you end up straining yourself more and prolonging that in a period of injury or illness. So in that sense, to a certain extent, that acceptance of pain and suffering becomes very important physically as well as emotionally.
To view pain as an indicator and as something to learn from, I think that would be a good perspective. Going ahead, Hislop says, people have said they are being punished by Swami. Is that a fact? Swami says, of course, in punishing a person for misdemeanor, Swami punishes in order to correct the defaulter. But though harsh in appearance and voice, Baba is all love inside. Sometimes Swami corrects a person in private, at other times in public. It depends on the individual. If the correction is in public, then all who hear may learn what pleases Swami and what displeases him. Butter may be cut with a finger, but a rock needs an iron hammer. It all depends on the material, the person. Swami is very strict in his rules. Swami is very strict in his rules and principles. An avatar does not compromise. To the devotee, strictness is ultimately the best kindness. Depending on the situation, Swami can be soft, kind, or he can be as hard as a diamond. He does not give only one chance. He forgives 1,000 times. But if persons still pay no attention, he clips them. So Swami makes it very, very clear that what we think as Swami punishing is not punishment but his own love. I remember in a discourse, Swami had said that there is rain and there are hailstones. When hailstones fall on you, they are painful, but those hailstones are also inherently the same water. It is the same rainfall in another form. So too, Swami would say, when I speak lovingly to you, it is the rainfall. And when I speak angrily with you, it is the hailstone. It is the same love, but coming in a manner, possibly because you didn't understand that. And Swami says, you are not given one, but 1,000 chances. After that only, Swami says, God clips. And I think when Swami is saying this, it's not just about Sai devotees. I think this is a general principle for any person and the way God deals with the person. I'm saying this because many times we think Swami is there, he'll ensure that I, you know, stick to my good behavior. But what about my boss in the company? He's not a Sai devotee. He'll just do anything and get away. No, he will not. The same Lord who is ensuring that I am disciplined and good is also there protecting me, like, as Swami would say, like an eyelid protects the eye. And whoever that person is, whether he is a devotee or not, he is within the Lord's ambit. And so Swami says, God gives a long rope, but once the rope is exhausted, it's a free fall.
And to be fair to Swami, one of our teachers would once say, when living close to Swami, we know that nobody is spared of the rod, you know, with Swami. And it's sometimes even more painful receiving it from Swami. You know, you kind of expect it from your boss, but you don't expect it,
correct,
you know, from Swami, who you feel is the embodiment of love in that sense. And so that time it is much, much more painful to receive it from Swami. But, you know, this teacher was once telling that there was a time when whatever he did, Swami would be upset with. You know, he could not even get up and say sorry, and Swami will be upset with him saying sorry, kind of a thing. And, you know, there are phases like that you go through, and you don't know what has hit you. You don't know what you've done wrong. And he was saying that at one period when he was going through that, he just stopped and thought that, can I claim that I rightfully deserve every time that Swami came and spoke to me lovingly? If you really look at it that way, all of us have been recipients of grace, which I don't think we can put our finger to anything and say that I deserved this because I did such and such a thing. We're very happy when we are receiving grace. You know, we don't question, you know, why Swami is speaking to me of the many 100,000s who are sitting outside. We don't bother asking that question. But the moment Swami is even 1% in our understanding unfairly being upset with us, then we are very, very angry and we are very disturbed about it. So that teacher was telling that, you know, once this idea came and I said, the Swami who can give me love unasked, he can also be strict with me for no reason. You know, he has got full right over me. But that faith that there's nothing that Swami will do which is inappropriate or because Swami is angry or Swami is upset with somebody else, to such emotions cannot be attributed to Swami. And in fact, in a relationship, that's what is very difficult with Swami. Because, you know, Swami is always right. And you hate it when someone is always right. But that is the fact. I think we should remember that without a reason, Swami is never disciplining us. Without a reason, Swami would never punish. And as Swami so beautifully says it, even when he's punishing, it is only an expression of his love and nothing more than that.
The best kindness, Swami says. Right. It is the best kindness.
Swami would call it the kopa prasadam. You know, anger which comes in, prasadam which comes in the form of anger.
Anger. See, when you said that, when Swami does good to us, some things are nice that are happening, we don't say that it is because of this that it happens. I think that is also like a noble case. Most of the times we just feel that we deserve all the good. We think no end of ourselves. We think we are the most high and most lofty people. And therefore anything, when Swami calls me for an interview, comes in my dream or graces me, I feel, yes, this is what I deserve. Possibly I will tell others that, you know, oh, it's all Swami's grace, I don't know what I did. But that's also for just winning the adoration and adulation of people around, as what a humble devotee he is. You know, we don't have humility, we have what we call in hostel jargon as humblicity, which is publicity of the humility.
Right.
Humblicity. So that's the thing. Going ahead, Hislop says, yes, Swami, people, devotees near Swami have to do their best to be perfect in their behavior. And Swami says, people, those outwardly distant from Swami, he tells, but not so severely as those near. People judge Swami by his near devotees, and so these individuals must follow very strict standards of behavior. Punishment also depends on the nature and magnitude of the error. It reminds one of the famous dialogue that Superman would say, with great power comes great responsibility.
Right, every superhero says that, I guess.
Even
Superman, Spider-Man also.
Okay. Right. So I think in this case it is with great proximity comes greater responsibility. We consider it as a great blessing to be physically close to Swami, work in his organization, be his sevadal, be his student, be his devotee. The moment we take on the tag Sai, I think automatically greater responsibility comes. And therefore, greater is the value given to the tag, greater is the responsibility. And that's why Swami says possibly those who are physically very dear to him. I think it's so sweet on Swami's part also to make this distinction. Else anybody would have thought that only those who are getting scolded by Swami are dear to him. No, Swami is saying those who are physically near will get more scolding. And we have seen that happening. Naturally, a teacher possibly gets more scolded than a student. A vice chancellor maybe has got scolded more than a teacher.
Right.
Because that is physical nearness. So Swami makes it very clear that while, you know, when you're getting scolded, you can comfort yourself thinking that, you know, I'm very near. That is why I'm getting scolded. Others need not feel discouraged that, oh God, maybe I'm not at all in Swami's scheme of things. Because Swami is specifically saying those who are physically near, they will have to, because people judge Swami based on these people who are near to Swami.
I think it was Kutumbrav Garu, he used to say that almost on a daily basis they would get, you know, some kind of reprimand for something or the other. So much so that there are days when, you know, he would have gone as, you know, the last call he would have made to Swami, he would have gone to Swami's room, reported whatever was happening in the ashram. And he would wait there in the room and Swami would ask, what happened? I've given you all the instructions, you've conveyed whatever you had to convey. What are you still waiting for? And he would say, Swami, today you have not shouted at me. You know, almost like, you know, that is clearly an acknowledgement of Swami that I have right over you, I can shout over you, and I consider yourself dear to me. So in that sense, it is acknowledgement of nearness, and to a certain extent, an acknowledgement of dearness also. But I think it is a hint for us. If we want to consider ourselves dear to Swami, and I think we should, you know, put ourselves to that kind of strictness within our own self, whether Swami puts us or not. In our country and in our press, always there is this debate about freedom of speech and freedom of expression. I still recall one of the ministers when she was talking to a interviewer, and the interviewer asked this question. So they say that the freedom of speech is under threat in our country. So then this minister says, do you think I have the freedom of expression and freedom of speech? Can I say anything I want in this interview? You will not spare me. Tomorrow I'll be torn apart in the press. So she went on to say that, see, with every responsible position or responsible role that you play, you have to sacrifice a bit of your freedom willfully. And knowing that this is what I'm going to do. And this is what happens, you know, when you want to be dear to Swami, when you want to be close to Swami, as you said, when you want to be a student, a sevadal, you want to be in the ashram, you want to be in a Sai center, you have to willfully give up a bit of your freedom and your ways of life if you want to represent Swami in any way. And I think the more we do it willfully, the more we are acknowledging that we are progressing towards Swami. And the more Swami shouts at us, it is, I think, his acknowledgement that he considers you as somebody whom he can hold up as an example for others.
See, it is a different thing when Swami physically shouts or scolds us. Now in the physical absence, you know, even in the Satisai organization, even within the spiritual organization that we are, when we see others, you know, shouting at us or you know, scolding or behaving nastily, I think we should go back to what Swami said before, that Swami can be soft or kind. Swami doesn't give a thousand chances. You know, we many times feel, Swami, how is it that you are allowing this person to hold this position, or how is it that you are allowing this person to head this place over here or be like this over here? Wondering, he doesn't seem to be following the things that you said. I think our focus should be on our own progress, growth and development. I have to ensure that all my actions are in accordance to what Swami said, and I am practicing that. It is not my business to bother about somebody else's spiritual growth. For that, Swami is there to take care. And let us again remember what Swami said. Not one chance, but a thousand chances. But after that, when people still don't pay attention, Swami clips them. So, I think it would be best for us not to worry about why somebody is not being clipped or why somebody is not receiving appreciation. We have to do what we are supposed to do in our position based on the roles and responsibilities that we have. As long as we do that to the best of our abilities, I think we are safe and fine, and Swami will be happy with us. The rest, as Swami would say, are only distractions. Don't bother about them. Surrender them at least to God.
No, one thing is very clear from, I mean, it apparently looked like there were different discussions. One was about healing, one was about generally taking medicines and then suffering. But one thing is very clear from at least whatever discussion we were having, the relationship with Swami is best when it is had one-to-one. For anything, for any purpose, don't bring the other person. You know, if Swami is shouting at you, he's shouting at you. If Swami is showering love at you, he's showering love at you. Any way you bring another person in the form of a comparison or in the form of a medium, in the form of a person who is going to be an agent for Swami's grace, I think we are diluting and polluting this relationship that we have with Swami. The more you have it as one-to-one, I think it's the best way to keep it that way, and it's the best way to progress nearer and dearer to Swami.
I think that's a beautiful thought to conclude this satsang with, praying to Swami that every moment of our life, our love for Him keeps growing and we always maintain that beautiful one-to-one relationship with Him. We'll conclude this satsang with a song, on the other side of which, as always, you'll be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
Baby! चाहे बदल जाए
Hey.